Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and I'm here today with a special guest, Donna Prisgintas, and you will be finding out very shortly why Donna is here this morning. Thank you for joining us, Donna. Well, I love the show we're planned for today because it is steeped in culture. Going to kind of be all over the place with the topic of culture, all different cultures around the world and how they are connecting in surprising ways to our community in central Iowa. And what is a better place to start than our own station here, KHOI? So I have a very exciting announcement to make as we start our show.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
KHOI's own radio show, the Donna Lana Kitchen, which is on Tuesdays at noon and 7 p.m. It's won international recognition, and the show was awarded a place among 41 radio productions from around the world to be featured by a project which has been sponsored by the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization in cooperation with the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, otherwise known as AMARC. It is one of the two programs chosen to represent the United States. The Donna Lana Kitchen's winning radio production is called
Carrot King and Jell-O.
Carrot King and Jell-O. Okay. Who can resist a name like that? It features an interview with Gary Guthrie, a farmer well known in central Iowa for his tasty carrots. And Guthrie's farm is Growing Harmony Farm, which is just south of Nevada, Iowa.
And these are excerpts from a show that we aired last summer.
And the show also explores the wide world of Jell-O. So the Donna Lana Kitchen, like I said, is a weekly radio show of KHOI, and you can hear it at noon and 7 p.m. on KHOI. And it is produced and hosted by Donna Lochtigal, who is an organic farmer, and Donna Prisgintas, who is a chef and is with here this morning. Donna, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. We were surprised as anyone.
It's very exciting. You kind of applied on almost a whim or a hope and a dream. Why not do this?
Well, we thought we have the material. We're doing this anyway. We might as well just put it out there.
And look what happened. This was a great moment for us to learn something also about the international world of community radio, since we've connected in this very exciting way with the organization that oversees community radio throughout the whole world.
An organization, I have to say, I knew, didn't even know it existed.
Right. Most Americans don't. So this is a little moment of media education that's very exciting, too, with a real connection to how this ends up affecting us. So I called the office of AMARC, World Association for Community Radio. They're located in Montreal. That's where their headquarters are. And I spoke with project manager Karen Poishi. This is the office of the secretariat of AMARC, and she is their project manager, meaning she's the person who, in a sense, comes up with and manages projects like the one we just got involved with.
And didn't they do this in conjunction with the
The United Nations. There was a conference in Rome about food.
A food and ag part of the United. That was an organization, at least I recognize. So
that's right. Well, she's going to explain this.
So good.
Becca, let's hear what Karen had to say.
AMARC is an international NGO. We work for the community radio movement with journalists also. It was founded in Montreal 30 years ago, so the headquarters is based in Montreal. Community radio is really big in Quebec and Canada. They really loved community radio, so they decided to found an NGO, and it started slowly, but it got it pretty big over the years.
Your main activity is developing projects that promote community radio in different parts of the world?
We have about 4,000 members in 150 countries around the world. But we're based in Montreal, but we have offices in Brussels, in Kathmandu, in Lima, and also in Africa, in Dakar.
So those are the administrative offices of the organization. This is a nonprofit organization?
Yes, it's a nonprofit organization, yeah.
You are the organization that, in a sense, unites and represents community radio worldwide. Is that correct?
Yes, we have members in the entire world.
Okay. Are there any places of the world that do not have community radio?
Yes, there are still countries that don't have community radios. Like, for example, Russia, you don't have any community radios for now. And in China, there's no community radio.
Is it a movement that's growing, or are the number of stations growing worldwide?
Yes, the numbers are growing every year, and we're working in that sense. We do a lot of networking between the different community radios, the federation, but we also do projects to help the radios everywhere.
How do stations participate in this international organization?
We have a conference every 4 years, and we discuss different projects, different orientations. Everything we do is decided by all the members, but every year we contact everybody so they have a say in everything that we do. And for participation, we contact them through mailing lists, through the website, through social media, so they can participate in the project. And every project that we do it with partners, but also with community radios.
Do you have a sense of where community radio is growing the most rapidly in the world?
Maybe in Africa and in Asia. Also in the Middle East at the moment is growing too.
And why is it? What's causing it to grow?
I think it's maybe political change that allows that to grow. There's been a lot of change, for example, in the Middle East. That change has allowed the community radios to have an access to the airwaves. You know, in Tunisia, community radio were not allowed. There's been change on the political aspect. Now they have a better access to the airwaves. So that's a good change.
As you said, one of AMARC's goals is to create projects that feature community radio and that partner mm-hmm. with other organizations. And this is really the kind of project that we ended up getting involved with. Can you describe this project?
Yes, that's a project that we did in collaboration with FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. It was related to the second International Conference on Nutrition that just said it was held in Rome in November. So before the conference, we wanted to get a sense on what nutrition mean in the different parts of the world. So we organized an international radio campaign with the different community radio just to see how we talked about nutrition, food, agriculture all over the world. So we launched an appeal to the radios, and we received a lot of submission, and we choose the best one. So that's how you came in contact with us.
How many people ended up sending submissions to the contest?
A lot. I don't remember how many responded, but more than 100, I think. But we chose 41 in the end from different parts of the world. And the topics are really varied, and everyone who submitted a production, it was very interesting to see how we talk about the topics are the same, nutrition, food, agriculture, but the way we talk about it is very different from one country to another. And we received a little bit of production from different parts of the world about urban farming. We know that it's a big trend around the world at the moment, so we got one from Quebec, actually, mm-hmm. and from Ireland. Yeah, and we received some from Japan about the Fukushima incident, mm-hmm. but related to agriculture and food. We got one from Iraq, and the production from Iraq was, of course, it's in Arabic, but they sent a script. So I could read a little bit about it. It's a discussion between an engineer and the host, and he's giving advice on how to be better at cultivating the land. So he's giving advice to farmers to have better agriculture. So that was one of the mm-hmm. goals of the campaign. And we received a lot on food security because it's a big issue. So
food security in the sense of being able to be sure that you have food, right?
Yes. Well, it's what we wanted to see also with this international campaign is how you feel about those kinds of issues, because it's really important. And that's the point of the conference also. It's how are we going to solve malnutrition and hunger in the world? They say that over 2,000 participants attended the meeting, but a lot of government people, representatives, but a lot of persons from civil society and business community. community also. So it was a really big, big conference.
And did you say this was put on by the United Nations?
It was, yes, the United Nations, yes. It's an important issue in every part of the world. There's a discussion going on in communities. It's very important that we continue to talk about it. And from AMAC's side, we really promoted the campaign. And I know that we reached a lot of people. Community radio have a role and are engaging their community by talking about different issues, and food and nutrition is certainly a big one.
Did AMARC initiate this particular project with the radio stations?
Yes, it was a discussion with FAO. We were a long-time partner of FAO, mm-hmm. and it was a discussion that we had, I think, over the summer with FAO, and it was a way to show the engagement of community radios, and it's something that we try to do more and more campaigns like this.
Mm-hmm. And it came out of your relationship with the UN that you have on an ongoing basis.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
So you got all these applicants, and who judged them?
We did on AMARC side. Well, we had different criteria for choosing the production, the quality of production, the topics. You have to be on topic. The language was one. The length was one. Everything was written in the appeal. And so, yes, we chose them.
What was the language requirement?
It was in French, Spanish, and English.
And English.
That's a requirement that we have with FAO because it's their working language. And we opened it up in the middle of the campaign. We decided, we had a discussion with them, and we decided to open it up to more language. Mm-hmm. So more community radios would be able to participate if they wanted to submit something. So then we had the possibility to have a production from Iraq, from Japan, from more places. They cannot necessarily produce in English or French or Spanish. Really, it was very open. So as long as the production was on food, on agriculture, on nutrition, we were very open-minded because we wanted to show the diversity of the production too. So that's why we have something, from my opinion, very different from one country to another. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to have 35 production that were all the same. I think it's more interesting this way.
It shows the diversity of approaches,
yes.
and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember the program that came from KHOI, from the Donna Lana Kitchen Show?
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us why did you choose this program? What was it about it that made you wanted to include it?
When I received it, I found it very engaging and well-produced. I really liked the jingle. And I think the topic was interesting, and it showed an aspect that we didn't have yet in the campaign. If I remember correctly, they have a portrait of a farmer, a producer of carrots. And the way they discussed with this person, it's something that we didn't have in the campaign yet.
What was it about the way they were discussing it that was different?
Just the way the both ladies, they engaged the person, the way that they discuss with this man, it's very engaging. It's very interesting. And the way they talk about food, from my point of view, it added value and information. I think it's interesting for an audience worldwide. So we decided it fitted well with the objective of the campaign. So we included it in the campaign. I think it's their tone. It's their passion for food, and it shows that they really like radio, they really like food, they really know their stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's really original. I listen to a lot of radio, and I really like their submission.
Some people would ask why Jell-O is a topic of international importance. Can you maybe explain why Jell-O is worthy of international attention?
Well, I think Jell-O is food, and it's original, and I don't know. I thought that it would interest a lot of people, and from what I heard here and the people that I suggested it to listen, everybody liked it, and they all find it really interesting and original. And, you know, most of the production that we receive are talking about public policies, environment, family farming, you know. It shows another aspect of the way we engage food nutrition. It's really an important aspect, too.
And in a way, what I hear you saying is it expressed how people love food.
Yes, it's really important to love food, and it's important to talk about food this way, too. So I was really happy to have a production like that in the campaign.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for including us. It was just a real great thing for us, too.
Well, I was really, really happy to receive this production. I was really happy to discover this show because I've been listening to it.
So. You mean you've been listening to the other shows that they've done?
Yes, yes. I really like it.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you know, it's really wonderful because they're very new. And,
oh, really? Okay.
They're not new at dealing with food. They're very experienced as, you know, chefs and as raisers of food. Lana's a farmer herself.
Okay.
So they have a lot of experience with food, but they're very, very new to radio. They have not even been on the air for a year. So this is a wonderful thing to feel so connected by an experience like this. So we really thank you for that.
Well, I thank you. I think they're really good. I really like them. So
that's wonderful. Thank you, Karen Poirhy.
Happy holidays to the people of Iowa from AMARC's International Secretariat.
And you're listening to Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and we were just listening to a conversation between myself and Karen Poirier, very French name, who is at the Office of the Secretariat of AMARC, the International Association for Community Broadcasters, which is the worldwide association that really represents community radio, which we're part of. Right now, we are really enjoying a moment of feeling part of this media world more than usual, and Donna Prisgintas is here with us. Donna, your head should be feeling pretty big at this moment. It's very exciting to hear how your show here at KHOI has really reached the whole world and really made a big impression. It was interesting because, you know, I heard her talking about how important food is a discussion that is happening all over the world. And it really puts in context what you and Lana are doing here at KHOI because you're part of that discussion. And that it's something that's happening in many places. We also have been joined right now by Belinda Merritt. Hi, Belinda.
Hello.
Belinda is a new member of the Local Talk team, and you're going to be helping to host today. So welcome and jump right in.
All right. Thank you. I do want to remind everyone that today is National Ugly Sweater Day.
Oh.
So be sure and wear your ugly Christmas sweaters.
Well, that explains that.
Yes, I'm afraid it does. Donna, we were wondering, how did you happen to choose this particular show for your entry?
Well, some of the process came, of course, because Ursula found the contest. So really, she was the instigator. Thank you very much, Ursula. Because of her involvement in community radio for many, many years, she's kind of got the pulse of this. So she passed this opportunity to Lana and I, and we said, well, why not? You know, we have all of this stuff in the can already, so to speak. And the guidelines for the contest were, as the woman said, were very, very open. So it was kind of hard to figure out. We went, well, it's a nutrition conference and it's the food and ag of the UN. What, you know, what should we do? And I kind of left it up to Lana. She just picked, you know, from the shows that we already have. And of course, choosing Gary Guthrie was lots of fun because he's a friend of both of ours and a, you know, kind of big member of our food community here. And thank you to Lana. She is learning to do all this engineering stuff. You know, I think one of the things from listening to what the woman said about the contest, because it was a shot in the dark, we had no idea what they really wanted. I think our show is fairly consistent in style just because of who we are.
One of the things that she said about your show that she felt was unique was that it articulated the love of food. Do you really love food?
I'm sort of food-centric. I'm sorry. I see it as the vehicle for all things, you know, nourishing and glad in the universe. So, and Lana is the same way. I mean, the reason we are partners on the show is because we both really feel that way and in a lot of ways have devoted huge swaths of the time in our life on these things. Lana certainly as a farmer, and we're both really interested in food policy.
So what got you into food?
Okay, I am from Illinois, and I am the last generation on both sides of farming families. And during my kind of later adolescence, all the farming land was sold off on both sides. We're agrarian in our background, for sure. Mm-hmm. Daddy was in the dairy business. And, you know, so food is just a natural thing. And then, of course, as I migrated first to the East Coast and then to the West Coast, I think being a chef was probably the closest I could come to going on with those interests that were just always, I mean, I didn't even think about it. I just did it.
So it really came from coming from a farm background.
Well, I think that added a huge difference to when I was growing up, or, you know, you're in an urban culture and you're the only one that on some place in your brain, you still know that the milk comes from the cow. The cow was in the field. Then it was in the barn. Here's how cheese is made. So as I cooked more and more, I always made sure that, well, in my work, and I feel like everybody on the planet has this obligation. Whatever your occupation is, you need to understand where all of those things came from that you're working with and then where they all go. So with food, obviously it's coming from farmers, and then you know about nutrition and how it affects communities and, you know, all of those things. So I'm not only interested in cooking food, but I'm really interested in the whole policies of it, the politics of it, the sociology of it, certainly the nutrition. A restaurant chef is somebody who's actually just, they don't have a relationship with the people they're cooking for. It's mm-hmm. just putting the food on the plate. So you can get very artsy about it. How does it look? How does it taste? But I have avoided that and always worked for people. So I am cooking food in a relationship.
So it's a connection to the world or to people for you.
That's been my bridge to do that.
The winning collection of the radio shows that we've been talking about, which is a group of 41 shows, yours
and
included.
And only two are American.
Two are Americans. The other one came from KOPN Community Radio. It's in Columbia, Missouri. The show was about food policy mm-hmm. and about Monsanto.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Of course.
The winning collection of the shows can be listened to or downloaded on the web, and the URL is a little bit complicated, and so we're going to put it on the KHOI website on our homepage under the filing of our local talk show this
morning. Okay, we'll probably put one on the Donna Lana page, too, for all of you that like to do the podcasts or streaming or something.
And it's definitely worth a listen to hear all these different voices from all over the world speaking about the issue of food. Thank you very much for coming this morning, Donna. And
I have to say one more thing. There was a small amount of prize money attached to it, and Lana and I are, of course, going to give it right back to the radio station because we want to support our platform, and we hope that everybody who listens supports KHOI. We are really lucky to have our own radio station here in town that's community radio. So thank you, Ursula, for all that you've done to make this possible and to keep it going. Support KHOI.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Donna. And thank you for giving us the prize money. And I think you're going to be giving it to us this evening at our open house.
A gala presentation tonight during the open house, which is from what?
5 to 7.
5 to 7. There we go.
So we've been talking with Donna Prisgintas and also hearing from the International Association for Community Radio in Montreal about the international contest that was held for shows about food, of which our own Donna Lana Kitchen was a winner. So it's very exciting, and congratulations again.
Thank you, thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Radio, and we are luxuriating in culture today, all over the world. That was the great French singer, Edith Piaf. And speaking of which, one of our own native Iowans is exhibiting paintings at Wheatsfield that celebrate France.
Yes, Joe Myers Walker, a longtime resident of our area. She's from Boone, Ames, and recently Gilbert, just got back from a trip to Rouen, France, the ancient city of Rouen. She's exhibiting paintings of the daily life there in France at Wheatsfield this month with her watercolors. Joe lives in Iowa City now, but she is known and loved by many here, and her artwork graces many homes in our community. Joe was here for the opening of her show at Wheatsfield, and she took a few minutes to come to KHOI and sit down and record an interview with me. So let's listen to that. Welcome back to Ames, Joe.
Thank you, Ursula. It's such a treat.
It's great to see you again. Now, you left Ames when?
June 30th, 2013. And I was in Ames about 30 years.
You grew up in Boone?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a Central Iowa gal.
Yes, I am.
Now you're an Eastern Iowa gal.
That's right.
You live in Iowa City now.
Uh-huh.
And why did you move to Iowa City?
I have children there, and they wanted me to come while I was vertical, as they said. And I just thought it would be a great place for me to be and then still do my grandchildren. There's the writers there. It's, and many artists. It's a very rich environment for me.
What have you been doing since you left us?
Oh, I've been kind of reinventing myself over there. Nobody knew me, which is wonderful, so I could do that quite easily.
Here in Ames, you were known as a watercolor artist and the owner of
the Left Bank Studio
in Gilbert.
Uh-huh. And so after I sold that, then I could move to Iowa City and start a new career there. I wanted to find out what it's like down there and the diversity, which meant painting on the Ped Mall. I live right downtown.
And what is the Ped Mall?
Yeah, it's right downtown Iowa City. It's kind of famous. It's not just bars, but shops and wonderful restaurants. It's walking. There's no cars. Their university is connected to the Ped Mall, you might say.
You're pursuing work there as a Franciscan, too. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you explain what that is?
I'm a Third Order Franciscan. And
the Franciscans are an order of the Catholic Church?
Yes, they are.
And what is your mission as a Franciscan?
Yeah, I am caring for the poor, respecting the land, peace, and justice for all, even giving a lot away. I took my four storage units that I had here in Gilbert and went over there, and I don't have one anymore. If you live simply, you can do so much more. You don't have to take care of so much, worry about it. I live in Ecumenical Towers, which is connected to this wonderful senior center. There again, I can volunteer, and I've also worked a little bit with United Action for Youth. You can do service anywhere. You can do service in your own building, your own, just by being a presence to people when they have needs. Yeah, it just, as in Ames, there's many opportunities to participate. And I didn't know anybody really, but I certainly do now. Yeah.
So do you like life in Iowa City?
Yes, I do. It's been a very good move for me. I think I can prosper there and grow there.
Reinventing yourself again?
Definitely.
New phase of your life?
Yes. I do that about every 5 years anyway. I just turned 70, living a little bit on the edge. Push yourself just a little bit.
For those people that don't know you, you've really spent your whole life supporting yourself as an artist, teaching and selling work.
Mm-hmm.
You're known in the area for your watercolors, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing now with your artwork?
In Iowa City, we got kind of like an urban sketching kind of thing where you go out and sketch and then maybe paint the scenes. I do that sometimes with others. I recently went to Rouen, France, and was there for a month with a couple other gals.
Why did you go to Rouen?
Because one of the gals had a connection to an apartment, a 17th century apartment building that we could stay in rather, you know, there simply and cook and share food and go out every day to the market.
Was this a painting trip?
It was for me. I wanted to make it almost like a pilgrimage so that I could become involved with the community, the people there, and that I was able to do that.
What is Rouen like?
It's kind of like Florence, I think, in a way. It's a little smaller. It's got the most oldest buildings, structures in France, kind of in one place. There's 1,000 churches.
Wow.
You know, which was, and we lived right next to the cathedral, big cathedral there.
Wow.
And all the history, you know, the Romans started it and then somebody else would take it over and build a little more and then it would go back to Christianity and mm-hmm. Anyway, I love the history.
What did it feel like being there?
It was very good for me because I felt like I was one with them. We're all just the same folks needing the same things.
Mm-hmm.
One day I went on a kind of an art walk around and visited different artists. And I ended up with at this one studio with Adeline. And they let me paint in their studio. And I couldn't speak with them too much. But, you know, art has that the language of you don't need language,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then I made friends with the chocolate bar man.
Oh, good move.
Yes. He had the Wi-Fi.
The what?
The Wi-Fi Wi-Fi.
They call Wi-Fi Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they have shots over there of like Nutella. And you instead of going in a you know bar, you get a shot. Well, you get a shot of chocolate along with your dessert.
Oh, nice. Do you speak French?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you draw pictures the rest of the mm-hmm. time. I created an art journal there, which is I'd sit there and sketch a little bit on the street. And I'd put down my thoughts, what I was feeling and seeing. And so each day I would mail back to my webmaster what I did or something I observed. I went up to Normandy, which was very moving, especially with the anniversary of the D-Day. And through the little towns.
Hmm.
And then you learn a lot of European history that mm-hmm. way. Castles. And I think I am related to William the Conqueror.
Oh,
I'm okay. Pretty sure. I sure felt the vibes of the castle there. And then, of course, we went to some of the paintings that I have at Weitzfeld. It's about Giverny, which is where Monet painted.
So tell us about the exhibit at Weitzfeld. You currently have a show in the Weitzfeld
mm-hmm.
store.
Yes.
From France? From your trip
yes.
to France?
Uh-huh.
So tell us about it.
Some paintings I did there, but it was, you know, it's hard. So I brought back this art journal, and I started painting from those. And it was wonderful to do that because you can smell and see and remember the bells chiming and so on. And it helps the trip linger.
When you make a sketch or a painting of something, in a sense, you're putting your memories down.
Yes. And so you might write a few words down in your journal, but then you'd also make a symbol of what you're trying to remember. It's the essence. So then I could take that essence, and when I come back, I can put those memories. And one of the paintings has me, an accordion player, because I would sit on the street and draw, and he would come over and sing to me.
Oh.
So he's in my painting.
Oh.
A lot of color. The buildings didn't have that much, and the streets were narrow, but I saw color because I wanted to make it a joyful place because it was very much for me.
The paintings are really a portrait of daily life in Rouen.
Yes.
It shows the breakfast. It shows the magnificent architecture.
Yes.
It shows people walking in the street.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stores, daily aspects of what it is to live in a European city.
That's right. And see, the shop owners are very proud of what their product is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no Walmart thinking there. And you come in and you say bonjour.
Mm-hmm.
Things were very relaxed. The meals, you know, are 2 hours.
And it does have to be said that while we're having this interview, we are drinking cucumber white tea.
Yes, we are.
We shall take a sip now.
Mm-hmm. I drank a lot of tea in Rouen. Yeah.
Okay. You're the artist on display this month at the Weitzfeld Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible to go in and see your work? Any store hours?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Weitzfeld's been very good to me over the years. We would come in and paint there to look at their beautiful vegetables and the color, the way they arrange them. They sell my cards there. They sell the cards of the show.
These works are for sale?
Yes. And so I did sell some last night. Yeah.
Excellent.
Which was very much a treat.
That's wonderful.
And then, you know, now I paint to travel. So that's kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make a lot,
yeah.
but I make enough.
Enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Living simply, but living
yeah.
well.
That's right.
So, Joe, what happens now for you? Where's your art going now?
Iowa Artisan Gallery carries me, and they want me to do scenes of Iowa City like I'm doing Nuruan, capturing the spirit.
And primarily in watercolor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It just seems like every few months there's something else for me to paint.
It's good to hear that life goes on for you, Joe. And thank you so much for coming and visiting us. Any last words?
Oh, I'm just grateful to be back because this truly is my home here in Ames.
Well, the art exhibit's beautiful at Wheatsfield. And again, the exhibit of Joe's work will be available at Wheatsfield for viewing and buying.
Yes.
Through the month of December.
That's correct.
Okay.
If it comes down maybe around the 1st.
And it's images of Rouen?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Watercolors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Joe. Thanks
thank
for coming
you.
By.
This is Local Talk. I am Belinda Merritt, and I'm here today with Ursula Rudenberg. We were just hearing from Joe Myers Walker. Joe is a beloved former member of our community who now lives in Iowa City. An exhibit of her watercolors is on display at Wheatsfield Food Co-op, which is located at 413 Northwestern in Ames. Her show will be up until the end of December.
And it was really great to hear from Joe and to just touch base with her and feel her presence again in our community. And today we are luxuriating in culture during this hour. Everyone who lives in Ames has become familiar with another form of unusual culture in our community. That's the Cyclone City, the project that has just put 30 decorated sculptures of Psy mascots around Ames, organized by the Leadership Ames Class, a training program of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. This project is a fundraiser for four charities, Youth and Shelter Services, Main Street Living, Emergency Resident Project, and a scholarship to ISU for someone from Ames. Most of the sculptures had sponsors, but a few of them were auctioned off recently, and from this, we get the next story that we want to bring you.
One of the most unusual versions of Psy can be seen from Duff Avenue and has been standing in front of Youth and Shelter Services across from the Panera parking lot. This is the Day of the Dead Psy. Reporter Susan Franzen visited YSS Director George Blitzos and asked him to describe the special relationship that YSS has developed to the Day of the Dead Psy.
What is the name of it, and what is the story behind it?
His name is Dia de los Cyclones, which is Day of the Dead, Cyclone. And he was painted by a tattoo artist, Hugo. A lot of people know Hugo. And he's celebrating the Mexican Day of the Dead, which is paying homage and remembering dead friends and relatives. But he's not only painted as a skeleton, which a lot of people thought looks very scary. Everyone but our kids thought it was scary. They just loved him as a skeleton. But all over the skeleton are flowers and leaves and a big heart. And he's really, really colorful and unique. He's very different than all the others.
For those who don't know the Day of the Dead, when is it and how is it celebrated in Mexico?
Well, it is celebrated in Mexico it's always in the fall, and it is...
Well, it's also Souls Day, isn't
all
it?
All Souls Day. Yeah, that's how we celebrate. And they go to the cemeteries, and they put flowers all over the grave sites, and family sit and have meals, and they play music, and they dance, and they pay their respects with celebration.
How beautiful. And actually, I have seen some of the items that come back from Day of the Dead. They're the paper cutouts.
Very colorful. We don't celebrate death in any way in this country. You know, it's always somber and morbid. We have Memorial Day. We go to cemeteries and we put some flowers out or a wreath. There's a different attitude toward death and celebrating life after death.
Yes.
In Mexico. And a lot of other cultures have a very different attitude toward death.
Of course, there is a holiday that we celebrate at exactly that date. We call it Halloween.
Yes.
And so children are used to seeing skeletons and supposedly scary things that aren't scary at all to them on Halloween.
And, absolutely. And, you know, kids love to be scared. So they love scary sci. When the Leadership Ames Chamber Group offered to let us have him on loan, I had no idea how popular he would become. We placed him right near Duff Avenue, 3rd and Duff, right if you look up the street as you turn on 3rd, where Lebeda is on one side. We're right behind up the hill from Lebeda. You can see our Psy statue from the parking lot of Panera Bread. So he's very visible. Everyone going down Duff heading north can see him. And we just had, first of all of our kids, especially the little kids who we see at the Family Life Center, we have over 400 clients that come there weekly. They loved Psy. They sat on his lap. They took photos with their parents. Once they spotted him, they were all over him. And I think he was a welcoming figure for them. I had no idea how popular he would become. Then the real Psy came to see what all the commotion was about. And we have all kinds of funny photos of the college student who dresses as Psy looking so surprised to see a skeleton. It just from the very beginning felt like he belonged there. It almost looks like he's a dinosaur, and kids love dinosaurs. And instead of being scary, which I thought they'd be scared of, they think that he's the most attractive one. So I never thought that YSS would be bidding on it. One, we don't have the money to bid on him to make this his permanent home. But two, I thought from the beginning nobody else wanted him, and come to find out he's the most popular Psy with the kids. So we fell in love with him because our kids did. And so I approached several donors and asked if they would help us. We had four donors. Jamie Pollard, who's the athletic director, he made a very generous gift of $500. And his son, Thomas Pollard, is a high school student at Gilbert, who's been in the paper a lot because he is one of the 10 best runners in the country. He broke the all-time record for the 2 mile here in Iowa, and he's a full voting member of our board. He made a very generous gift of $500. And then we had another gift from John Sargent and another gift from Jim Black. John Sargent is with Todd and Sargent, and he was also one of the Leadership Ames participants who made this whole project possible. And Jim Black, chair of our foundation board, he's been very generous to YSS. So we attended the auction and we bid. The Psy just before ours went for over $10,000. So I thought, oh, no way we're going to be able to touch that. Ours went for $2,750. I don't think he was that popular. The one that went for $10,000 was the most traditional-looking Psy. And so he went for four times what our Psy went for. We wouldn't have been able to do it if it had gone that high, so it was meant to be.
It's a lovely story.
The other reason I'm so overjoyed to be able to hold on to Psy is that it helps solidify our birthplace on the Iowa State campus. YSS was started by myself and a group of Iowa State students. We were all volunteers, and we started the first runaway shelter. And so all these years, our chair of our board and all of our first board members were all Iowa State faculty and students. All through all these 38 years, Iowa State has played a major role here at YSS. Most of our 500 active volunteers are Iowa State students. We have many interns from Iowa State, 60 of them have become full-time staff. We get funds from Iowa State students, gifts for the holidays. I could just go on and on. Just yesterday, the LGBT committee, they had a event, and they gave us $1,000 just yesterday for our work with LGBTQ youth. I think having PSY on YSS property helps make a statement that we are very close to Iowa State, and we like to show our gratitude.
And obviously, the community likes to show their gratitude, too, or you wouldn't have this beautiful statue that the children love. I noticed in the paper that they said you were going to move it to different facilities
yes.
in coming years.
Yes, we are. We're going to move him next to our headquarters from the Family Life Center, and then kids at the Youth Recovery House want to have him in their front yard for a while. And we also plan to move him outside of Ames to some of our community-based centers. He's going to make the rounds, bringing joy everywhere he goes.
Yes, what a beautiful, beautiful statue and beautiful story. And thank you so much for this interview, George.
Thank you for asking. I really appreciate it. I think it is a great story.
We've been talking with George Felitzos in the Jacobson Building, which is the old City Hall in Ames.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI. Thank you, Susan, for going to YSS and getting that lovely interview. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, hosting today's show with Belinda Merritt, and we're thoroughly enjoying the arts today. First, we talked about the art of radio production on a global scale, and then we visited with local artist Joe Myers-Walker, who brought back watercolors from Rouen, France. And then we got to know a very special sculpture in Ames that has its artistic roots in Mexico. What's next, Belinda?
Tibby Kelcha has joined us. Tibby is
Hello.
A visual artist. And
hi, Tibby.
Hi.
And part of CART. CART is presenting Pop-Up Ames, which is an exhibition of unjuried, uncensored art, and is free. Tibby, could you tell us, when will this event be held, the date and the time?
Right, so this event is going to be one night only. It's going to be held on December 19th, next Friday, 1 week from now, from 7 to 10 p.m. So, as you said, it's an unjuried show. It's open to any artist at any level, any age, any interest. We're trying to accommodate as wide a range of possible art forms, 2D, 3D, video.
And how do people participate?
Anyone can sign up. They can sign up online on the Ames Cart's page. So the address is amescart.org/pop-up-ames. And there is a registration form there. Some basic questions, you know, the name of the artist, the title of the piece, price for sale if you're interested, dimensions. Those are mostly for us to create the labels for the pieces and kind of have an idea on how to organize the exhibition, how to install it on the walls.
And where will this exhibition be held?
So it's going to be held at Design on Main. This is the second installment of this exhibition. We're kind of trying to make it like an annual event. And it's always been held at Design on Main, on Main Street, 205 Main Street. In the building that's rented out by ISU for the integrated visual arts, they have a big gallery space on the first floor. And we can use that space for one night to create this exhibition.
This is a project of CART?
Yeah, Ames CART. Yeah, Ames Collective Art or Community Art. I'm never sure which one is.
And what is that?
It's a small organization. There are several Ames artists. We get together and have projects. We can have exhibitions. We can have, we've had murals. We've created a modular mural where we've asked people in the community to paint small tiles and then we assemble them into a larger mural. In the past, we've had plein air painting classes. Oh, the vending machine at the
Whitfield
Co-op, you know, the one that sells small pieces of art. That's also our project.
So why Pop-Up Ames?
Well, it's a pop-up show. So
why do it?
Why not? But, you know, basically kind of comes down to that. We wanted to put in contact Ames artists. Mm-hmm. You know, for one night you can go there, show a piece of yours, get in touch with other artists, you know, have a little bit of wine or whatever we have there, you know, have a good time. We're going to also have live music. So we kind of wanted to make it like a celebration of mm-hmm. visual arts and of local artists here in Ames, and kind of try to be able to put artists in Ames in contact with each other.
Great. So give us again the basic information.
The exhibition is going to be one night only next Friday, December 19th, from 7 to 10 p.m. It's going to be held at Design on Main, 205 Main Street. You should go to our website, amescart.org/pop-up-ames. All the information about the show is there and the registration for artists.
And obviously for the public, everybody's invited to come to the opening.
Oh, absolutely. It's open to the public. And yeah, last year we estimated we had over 200 people coming for the show to view the show and, you know, have a good time.
That's great. Thank you. And thank you for coming back again, yeah. Tivi. It's always great to have you here, and hope to see you back here soon with another announcement.
Well, I hope so too. Thank you.
We have a few other events to announce before we end today.
On Tuesday, the 16th of December at noon at the Collegiate United Methodist Church in Ames, there will be a town meeting in Ames with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Join Vermont's independent U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, along with ISU students and community members, for a town meeting to discuss how we, number one, deal with the issue of wealth and income inequality. Second, get big money out of politics. Third, make college education affordable and combat climate change. Again, Tuesday at noon at the Collegiate United Methodist Church in Ames, 2622 Lincoln Way.
Linda, tell us what live concerts are coming up.
Certainly. Tonight, Friday, December 12th, the Electric Hillbillies will be at The Bar at 8 o'clock p.m. Paul Doffing and Ryan Steyer will be at Gigi's Tap House. And then Matt and Sean will be at Westtown Pub. Saturday, December 13th, A Merry Tuba Christmas will be presented at United Methodist Church at 516 Kellogg, Ames, and this will be at noon. There will be two performances of the Nutcracker Ballet at Stevens Auditorium, the first at 1:30 p.m. and the second at 7:30 p.m. Strong Like Bear and Electric Jury will be at DG's Tap House. Richard Arndt is performing at Crossroads Tavern. On Sunday, December 14th, another performance of Nutcracker Ballet at Stevens Auditorium will be held at 1:30 p.m. Then at 3 o'clock, Sweet Singing, which is the Ames Choral Society's holiday concert, will be held at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church at 209 Colorado Avenue at Ames. And that is at 3 o'clock p.m. Songwriter Night with Brooks Strauss, Nate Logsdon, and Lesbian Poetry will be held at Blue Stem, which is the building that was formerly Zeke's. And this will be from 7 to 10 p.m. Later in the week, Tuesday, December 16th, Danu, a Christmas gathering at Stevens Auditorium at 7 o'clock p.m. And then on Thursday, December 18th, Sister Act, which is a musical, will be presented at Stevens Auditorium at 7 o'clock p.m.
Thank you, Belinda. And also, finally, you are invited to join us this evening from 5 to 7 here at KHOI for a holiday open house and a toast to our members. Join us, and even if you're not a member, at 6 p.m. there'll be a special holiday reading by KHOI personalities Hollis Monroe and Mary Richards. Help us congratulate our international award-winning radio hosts, Donna Lana Kitchen, as they present KHOI with their prize money. Thank you, ladies. And again, join us for a toast and refreshments at KHOI from 5 to 7 this evening at KHOI 410 Douglas in Ames. So that's it for Local Talk. Local Talk was engineered today by Rebecca Brown, and our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was The River Seine and a ballad by the great Edith Piaf. Local Talk is archived at KHOIFM.org, so if you're interested in any of the information we've just discussed today, or if you want to go back to hear it again, you can find it at KHOIFM.org, and we are also streaming live at KHOIFM.org. Tell your friends.
Remember, this is a great time to join KHOI if you have not yet done so on our website, KHOIFM.org. Thank you, and we'll see you again on the radio.